Hey, good Sunday evening, everybody. Welcome to the Rocky Top Rewind. I'm Eric Kane alongside Brent Hubbs, and we're presented as always by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. That's TN Trial Lawyers. You can get a free estimate and consultation if you pick up the phone and dial 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185 at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, they'll find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. Got a lot coming up here on today's show. Going to recap looking at Tennessee and Florida. It was an overtime 23-17 win over the Florida Gators. Tennessee now sitting at 5-1, 2-1 in Southeastern Conference play. Getting set for the third Saturday in October, a 3:30 kick on ABC against the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll look ahead to that. We'll look back and talk about Tennessee offense, Tennessee defense. We'll spend the majority of the time over the next hour answering your questions. So if you're here in the live chat, send in the questions. I'll put a star by them. We'll work those in throughout the hour. And then Austin Price is going to join us at 8:40 to talk about the game and a little bit about the recruits that were in campus for Tennessee's win over Florida. Brent, you and I both have gone back and watched the game and taken some notes. And end of the day, I kind of said this on the post-game mini-pod last night. Like, it wasn't pretty. Offense is still struggling. There's some issues. Don't get me wrong. I mean, defense is doing what the defense has done, and that's, you know, worthy of a separate conversation. We'll get to it. But a lot of frustrations at time. But at the end of the day, you beat Florida. A lot of the times you were on the losing end in this football game to Florida. You found every way to lose, and you thought you were going to find a way to lose yesterday. But you beat Florida, a series that typically it hasn't gone your way. You won at home, and everything is still out in front of you. Good afternoon, or good evening.
Well, and that's the world we live in college football right now. I mean, it's you know, survive in advance. We're not playing at right now. We'll see what it looks like later on down the season. If you can get through, what does it look like when you can start stacking a bunch of one-loss teams up against each other, if that's what you end up having. But right now, I mean, it's a week-to-week survival deal. And, you know, Tennessee found a way to survive and move forward. Defense carried them again. I've said this a couple of times. If you'd have said in August that the Tennessee defense would get through the first half of the season and not give up 20 points to any opponent they played, you'd think Tennessee's one of the most dominant teams in college football. But they're not. They're struggling on offense right now. But you never in this series take a win over Florida for granted. I mean, you just don't do it. This is not like beating Kentucky or Vanderbilt or teams you've beat on a regular basis. And I know Vanderbilt's obviously a lot better this year. I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying the magnitude of this game, because of divisional play, because Tennessee and Florida were two best teams in that division for a long, long time before the emergence of Georgia. You just never take this win for granted. And Tennessee's lost it every way possible. You know, when at 10-0, you started to wonder if Tennessee was going to lose another one at home when they were a heavy favorite. But Tennessee got off the deck. They found a run game in the second half. They found enough plays in the passing game. Defense got them a field goal on the Arian Carter interception. And you move. I mean, and I said this on TV this morning in Knoxville. I mean, it is a little bit like and what Michael was talking about there with his chat comment. I mean, it is a little little bit basketball-like. It is a little bit survive in advance. Ole Miss was unable to survive. It doesn't look like they're going to advance at this point, right? A&M lost one early. It looks like they're playing really well right now. Now, they've got some challenges down the road for them. But, I mean, Georgia's going to Texas this weekend, and that feels like an absolute must-win for Georgia. You know, to stay firmly in the race, it feels like that's a must-win for Georgia. Now, we'll see. There may be several 2 and even a 3-loss team getting the playoff. We'll just have to see, you know, what that looks like as the season progresses. Right now, you're just trying to take care of yourself. You won, go back to work today, go back to work tomorrow, continue to try to fix some of your offensive woes, try to help some of your offensive shortcomings, Eric, and figure out a way to score more points than Alabama's going to score on Saturday.
Brent, you look at the pauses from this football game, obviously. A negative was being shut out in the first half for the second straight week. We'll get to the offensive woes here in a moment. But, I mean, this defense, talked about it last night again. I mean, I don't think Florida, Arkansas, NC State, Oklahoma is going to win any awards for offensive play this year. But, I mean, you're 6 games into the season here. You're halfway through the regular season. And your defense, as you pointed out, is you have to give up 20 points. You know, national ranking, top 10 in this, top 10 in that, leading the SEC in this and that. You kind of are who you are. I mean, this defense continues to go out there every single Saturday. Doesn't matter who they're playing. They're getting after it. They're going to work. It's not been perfect. It's been far from perfect. In fact, the last two games, talked about it again on that post-game mini pod, giving up the lead late in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's not ideal, but finding ways to hold teams to 19 points and 17 points and 10 points. I mean, that's really, really good. You know, Tennessee, we'll talk about Keenan Peely here in a moment, but lost Keenan Peely the second or third play of the game. I had to overcome that. I thought Tennessee's defensive line played so well. Omar Norman Lott had a couple of sacks. Amari Thomas, I thought, showed up everywhere in the first half. Bryce Neeson had a couple of plays, one specifically in overtime that I thought he read that screenplay on a stunt so well. I think Tennessee's corners, and you've mentioned this several times about being the most impactful transfer, and that's Shermont McCoy. It's hard to argue that. Thought he was all over the place, big fourth down PBU. Ricky Gibson running the alley, making that tackle, running in motion on fourth and one was a great play. He had a couple of plays. Tennessee's corners are playing well. Wasn't impressed with the safety play overall last night. I thought Christian Charles is playing really well for him. But the defense just continues to go out there and do it. And when you are playing defense the way you are right now, you're allowing yourself to be in games and win games for your offense to catch up. And I think that hope is just, hey, hoping the offense can continue to improve week by week and getting back to those explosives. And then you put it all together, you're a pretty dangerous team. But this defense right now, carrying the team MVP, and another reason why they won last night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're giving you a chance every ball game. Now, I think it's unrealistic to say, hey, don't give up more than 17 a game the rest of the way here and win. I think that's hard, but you know, listen, they're doing what they need to do. That's a group that's developed. They've gotten better every year. Their identity has gotten clearer every year. They're benefiting from a very experienced defensive front. We know it's a line of scrimmage league, and they're winning in the line of scrimmage well. I thought a couple of freshmen, you know, Boot Carter really took a step forward last night. I think that was positive. So, I mean, they're doing some good things, and they're going to have to continue to do some good things and continue to play really well. Tennessee just can't put them in some of the situations they put them in at times last night. And then the defense put themselves in a couple bad spots, but they certainly showed up in the red zone and made some stops. I mean, Florida was just abysmal in the red zone. They had 10 snaps in the red zone, and six of them were for negative yard plays. Yeah. Zero were negative yards, and they turned it over on downs, and, you know, they did not play well in the red zone, and give Tennessee a ton of credit for that. Tennessee had the one bust in the red zone late, which you got to avoid that one. I mean, you cannot give that play up right there for a touchdown. You can't have that kind of mental bust at that point in the game when the offense has put it back on you to get out of there alive. They did it to you. They put it on you at Arkansas, and you didn't get it done. You really didn't get it done last night because you gave up the score and allowed it to go to overtime. Then you got it done in overtime. So you got to close out better, and I'm sure that's a message from Tim Banks, certainly, when it gets put back on you. But you'd like your offense to make a first down or two there and put that thing away for yourself. And you know, that's where this offense has got to grow. And I think that's the bottom line with this team. The defense is playing well enough to have you in the mix to be a playoff team and to see what can happen. But the offense has just got to step up and improve.
That first half drive chart for Florida, punt, field goal, turnover on downs, fumble, end of half. And Tennessee will take that penalty there with the illegal substitution for that runoff there to end the half. I mean, what a – Billy Napier's had some issues with special teams throughout his tenure at Florida, and that was another one of those. In the first half alone, I mean, Tennessee's defense kept him in the game the entire time, but the first half – Florida marched on Tennessee's side of the field and Tennessee's side of the 50-yard line on all five possessions in the first half. The Gators had the football inside the Tennessee 25-yard line on four possessions, only 3 points to show for it. James Pierce had that critical, you know, strip at the goal line, and Brent, I think it was really, really big for them to call that a fumble in the field of play, because if they were to say he was down, then review it, I'm not sure that it gets overturned. But they called it a fumble. I don't think it was enough to overturn it the other way either. But James Pierce had that strip, which was huge. You had Ricky Gibson with the fourth down stop. And that was on back-to-back defensive possessions. And that halted long, sustaining drives from Florida. In those two possessions where they couldn't finish, they went 18 plays, 151 yards, and they consumed 9 minutes of the game clock. I mean, Tennessee's defense, definition of bend but not breaking. Really great all night. Didn't finish the way they wanted, as you referenced, but in the first half, I mean, goodness gracious, you know, having it 3-0 at halftime, you couldn't have asked for anything more of your defense. And they came up big with those turnovers and those fourth down stops.
Yeah, they certainly did. And lots of things to get to. I know we're going to jump into a bunch of questions here because we talked about a good bit of this stuff, you know, obviously in the podcast a little bit. We've written about it in our rewind pieces as well. But, you know, yeah, it's the definition of bend and not break. You probably don't want to bend that much, you know, but Tennessee found a way. And again, I don't want to take anything away from what Tennessee accomplished to win that football game because you've lost it in a million different ways. But Tennessee's got to go get better, and that's the challenge now. Is you're seeing some growth out of the defense. You got to see more growth out of the offense, you know, big time. So you know, we'll see what this team can get done, and you know, and watching it in the rewatch, they were not as bad offensively as I anticipated them being, and what I mean by that is, there were some signs of life, particularly in the second half, where they were right on the cusp of some real rhythm. They just missed on a couple of throws that were good play calls. I mean, it felt like that one was a lot closer than the Arkansas game, where you just had two drives. You had two drives at Arkansas. One of them was a big splash play. And that's really all you had in that game. This felt like you were a little bit closer. I thought they were better in pass protection in this game than they were in the first game. They've just got to do some continued things to help the quarterback out and get the quarterback going with more confidence. I don't think he's shattered. I don't think he's shot. I don't think it's that, Eric. But I do think that he is I think he's probably seeing some ghosts right now because he's had a lot in his face, a lot of run around. I thought he bailed out of the pocket a couple times a little bit early. I think he's a little bit hesitant. He's not leading receivers the way that you need to, that they've got to get him back with a little bit of mojo. I mean, the fumble's on him, but man, what does that game look like if they score on that first drive and how much do they get going out of that? You never know. Tennessee's got to finish there, and that's on Nico. He's got to play that better. The interception was atrocious. You can't make that play. You got to be much better with the football there. But there were some signs of life, and I thought there were a few wrinkles in there. I just think Tennessee gets impatient from a play-calling standpoint in the passing game. You know, they'll get a five-yard out, which is an easy throw. And then they'll hit a run up in there, and they'll get a first down. So now we're going to go fast. And we get, all right, we got our one first down. Now we need a chunk play. You know, now we need a big shot play. And then all of a sudden, then it's an incomplete or it's a negative yards play. Now you're at second and 15 or second and 12. Quarterback's been knocked down. Just keep taking some easy stuff until everybody kind of gets going. I mean, I liked what they did in overtime. Donovan mentions this, I think, at the start of the chat log here. I do like what they did in overtime, you know. Just raise up and throw it to Dante Thornton, right? I mean, throw a little bubble out there to Squirrel. And you're looking for 8 to 10 yards. You don't have to have 30 yards or a 40-yard chunk play. I just feel like Tennessee, from a play-calling standpoint, gets a little bit impatient in the passing game. Nico missed a wide open Mike Matthews early in that game. Had a chance for a big play there. He just didn't see him and missed him. That's one you'd like to have back. I think when you see on if you get the All-22 film rewatch, you're going to see Mike Matthews was open and they didn't get there. But you got to get Mike. I mean, either Mike Matthews is ready to help you, or he's not ready to help you. I mean, it's kind of that point, like put him out there and let's see what he can do. Let's see more than 7 snaps. Get the ball in his hand, let's see what he can do and go from there. I mean, I think Tennessee's got to be a little more creative offensively to help that offense out.
Yeah, and I mean, if it wasn't last game, then I mean, when's it going to be, right? I mean, Squirrel was battling in and out all game long. Respect to him because he was hurting, and you knew he was going to. I mean, that AC sprain, that shoulder is no walk in the park. And of course, you know, Brew was limited, obviously, coming off last week, but he played last night. Dante Thornton didn't play until overtime. I'm with you on that. I think, and someone brings this up, we're going to get to it. You know, I thought Nico rolling out looked so much better than Nico in the pocket. And they called a couple of rollouts, you know, play action, rollout. They had a bootleg. I think that was last week. And he looks good in that regard. I mean, I would continue to go back and doing that. I text you about this afternoon. I think it's nowhere near where it needs to be. You know, the penalties are hurting them. The tackles with the penalty. I mean, three penalties on John Campbell, 2 holds, then negated first downs, 1 personal foul on the interception, I believe. I mean, that just can't happen. Lance Hurd's hold, he was up top, so it's kind of, you know, as an official, that's an easy flag to throw. But
his arms are outside. He's not inside. You know, when the official sees that arm on somebody's bicep, he's going to throw that flag most of the time. I thought it was a ticky-tack call.
Yeah.
Agreed. Okay. I mean, I didn't think it impacted the play. But again, if your hands are inside, you get away with that one. If your hands are outside, that's going to get called most of the time.
But I like you when I was rewatching it when I was done, and I charted all of Nico's throws. I wanted to go back, and I mean, they got it at Pro Football Focus too, but I wanted to see. It's not where it needs to be. They got some work to do. Nobody's saying Nico played great, but I mean, I was like you. You had two series last week offensively. Tennessee had several where they did a lot of good things. They just didn't finish, or they shot themselves in the foot, and you know, ironically, with that fumble on the first series of the game, man, when Tennessee was moving down the field, I've been begging for Nico to keep it a lot this year, because how is the defense going to respect that on the play action or you know, on the zone read if he doesn't keep it every now and again? You know, we had this conversation about Joe last year, and he did a couple of times, ran for a first down, but on that first series, he was trying to pull it out, and of course, the fumble, the exchange there. Let's get to some questions here. Let's roll into some questions. Austin wants to know, how many points does this offense need to put up to beat Alabama? I'm guessing minimum of 24 to 28 to have a chance. Brent, I would say they need to score more than 23 in overtime. That's for sure, to beat Alabama. I don't think Alabama's got it all figured out. We saw them this past Saturday. Of course, we saw them against Georgia. Saw them lose to Vandy. But your offense is going to have to score more than what it scored the last 2 weeks for sure to win this football game. So I think anywhere from 24 to 30. And that's with your defense playing the way it is. Now, defense is going to give up some as well. Jalen Milroe is a football player, so offense needs to score some points this week.
Yeah, this is the first time I think Tennessee's played a team that's got a guy who can score from anywhere on the field.
Yeah,
I think Milroe can, if you bust it, he can obviously run it a long ways if you want him to. You've seen him do that. But then Ryan Williams, you can throw it up to him, and it can be an 80-yard touchdown. So, they haven't played a guy like that. So that'll be the challenge. Alabama's obviously not played well the last 2 weeks. That secondary is vulnerable. The question is, can Tennessee attack that secondary? If they can, then Tennessee should score more than 24 points. If they can protect well enough, if they can do some waggles and things and get after that secondary. I think that was the most disheartening thing last night. Tennessee's been waiting to get some opportunities to get behind people. They got two matchups against the safety where they could just run right by him. You missed Squirrel on the deep one on the diving attempt that was just over his outstretched hand. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the play call was on the Chaz Nimrod deal. I don't know if that was a boundary fade or sideline fade, and he was supposed to bend out as a slot receiver. I thought when I saw there was no safety in the middle of the field and he ran right by him, throw it inside and let him run to it. I just don't know what the play call was. I don't think that was a very good throw by Nico because it landed out of bounds. So even if Chaz was over there, I think it was going to be hard to get a foot down where the ball landed.
Yeah,
that just wasn't executed right. But, man, how many times have you been waiting? I mean, fans have asked on this show. They've asked on the podcast, mailbag podcast, message board, like, why can't they get anybody open like we've saw in years past? That was it. You had one wide open there and you missed it. That should have been a layup. That was a bad miss.
Yeah, that was a bad miss. Later in the game, Nimrod was close and was wanting a flag. Man, I thought that was a pretty good throw. I thought that was one that could have been connected on. Of course, one to Squirrel, where Squirrel laid out. One to Brazzle down the sideline, where he makes the catch. He's pushed out of bounds. Again, it's close. And you know, horseshoes and hand grenades, I get it. But it's not like you're that far off. And if one or two of those plays hit, it changes the game for sure. But again, that's not how it was on Saturday night.
And this is an Alabama secondary that can give up some deep balls. You can attack them vertically down the field. I think Tennessee's got to figure out a way to protect well enough so that they can try to attack vertically.
Rocky Top Golf wants to know, is it possible the offensive play calling hasn't been as aggressive this season because we finally have a good defense to fall back on? Now, easy answer to this is no. But, like, I mean, you saw at Oklahoma, right, where they were at tackles, where they were trying to protect Nico, and the way the defense is playing, they rode the defense to a victory. I think that at points in times, you know, third and long or whatever, they're just being conservative because they can fall back on that defense. But overall, Brent, I think that you want to play complementary to your defense, but you're struggling offensively. You're struggling to protect. You're struggling at the quarterback to process, sometimes making bad decisions. It's more on the offense. The offense is having its own issues, but at times I do think that the play calling is affected by that because they're just being more a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, but when you're trying to put a game away in the fourth quarter, you got to be able to make a throw. I mean, I'm not saying a home run throw, but you got to be able to convert second and seven at Arkansas when you got a wide open, you got an open receiver across the middle. You've got to be able to make, because you're just not going to line it up and run it three times consistently in the final 4 minutes of the game. I mean, we compared it last night that the SEC kind of feels like the NFL right now. How many NFL teams in the final 4 minutes just say, hey, we're going to turn and hand it and we're going to go to the house? Or do they have to make a play in the passing game? You got to make a play in the passing game. Yep. And so Tennessee's got to execute better in critical situations. They've got to have some better answers for Nico in those critical situations. And they've got to execute much better when whatever is called there, that you can convert third and five for a first down late in the game, that you're not afraid to call that, that you're not afraid to call second and seven across the middle at Arkansas, which you failed to execute. You got to be able to make those plays. And so, yes, he clearly took the foot off the gas at Oklahoma. I don't think he took the foot off the gas last night. I don't think he was conservative in the first half last night. I think he was maddened by it all last night. And I think if you watch the postgame press conference, Josh Heupel, that's about as close as you'll see him as at a loss for words. Like when he got offensive questions, there was a pretty good pause before he answered questions because he just – you could tell he is a frustrated football coach with his offense right now.
Yep, he certainly is. Austin wants to know, do you think we can overcome Keenan Peely, T-Lander, and then who? Certainly didn't look good last night with Keenan Peely going down a couple plays in the game. Was out, and you could kind of got a glimpse of what it would be like without him. It was a whole lot. And Tennessee was unique last night as well. They were playing three backers, part of the game plan early on in downs, and they would shift back to their base, and Boo Carter would come back on the field and one of the backers would go out. But it was a lot of, obviously, Jeremiah T-Lander along with Aaron Carter, but Caleb Perry played 36 snaps, I think. Jalen Smith played a lot, and I don't think he had a particularly good game, but something you wrote about in your 10 things, I mean, the fact that they got him some run at NC State and some of these other teams, it means he wasn't lost last night. I think Edwin Spielman, Brent, you know, when and if, you know, whenever he comes back, is going to be in that rotation, you know, if you're down Peely. Because he played some meaningful snaps against Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. So, you know, we'll see exactly what the prognosis is. It doesn't feel like it's good, which is a shame. But Tennessee at least is in a better spot now than they were last year. Way better spot than where they were in 2021. But it's still a spot you don't want to be in.
Yeah, I think the question is, does Caleb Perry move inside? Who's your backup to Jeremiah T-Lander in the middle? Who's your inside guy? Because Spielman's played outside. I don't think you're going to cross-train him and have him ready. I think he's going to stay out there. Jalen Smith's only worked outside. T-Lander cannot be your only inside backer. Now, I know those parts are a little bit interchangeable, but I think Perry's the guy who can back up T-Lander and probably has to slide into that role. And Jalen Smith and Spielman are your backup guys to Arian Carter on the outside. And then – you know, if you have any other injuries, you're going to have to get really creative. And heck, you might have to get into some three safety look before it's all said and done, which I don't think you want to do. So it's T-Lander, and I think Perry would be behind him. It's probably where they'll ultimately go here without Keenan Peely.
Let's go to Mark, and it says, hey, is Lance Hurd replaceable? What did you think of Lance Hurd's play yesterday compared to Arkansas? I think that it's still not where it needs to be. Same for a lot of those guys up front, okay, not just singling out him. He had that holding call we already talked about. He had a critical block there on the you know, the pull, and he led up and actually had a block there at about the 10-yard line to get Dylan Sampson in the end zone, I thought was big. Not where it needs to be, but I saw a little bit of improvements. What say you about Lance Hurd? Because to be completely frank, it's hard to be worse than where you were a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he gave up a sack. Yeah. On that three consecutive sack deal, really bad balance with his feet, lunged forward, pretty easy inside move by the defender. Didn't have to be elite with speed to get inside for the sack there. I thought that was his worst pass set of the day. Some of the other stuff wasn't awful. they completely, and when I say they, I mean everybody on the left side butchered the first run or second run of the last drive in regulation. I have no idea what that was supposed to be. That was a left-handed run or a left-sided run for Dylan Sampson. The end goes and splits Andre Kerrick and Hurd almost untouched. So Sampson bounces, and Dante Thornton's playing in that, at that role because he got in on that last series before overtime. He didn't block anybody off the corner. Hurd takes a couple of steps forward and never touches anybody. I don't think that was a lack of effort play. I think that was a bust by that side. I don't know if it was called wrong in the huddle. I don't know what happened there, but that one did not look right. I thought Hurd was better in this game than he was against Arkansas. I thought his tempo was better. There are times where he puts it together and it looks pretty good, and there are times where he gets himself in trouble with some questionable footwork. And so I do think Tennessee feels like he's a better option than Larry Johnson is right now. They are rotating Dane Davis on that right side with John Campbell some. So I think that you're going to continue to try to get Lance Hurd to come along, and I think he's going to be your guy. I don't think you're going to see him pull them out of the lineup and go with Larry Johnson. And I'm not trying to pick on Larry Johnson, but Josh Heupel took the foot off the gas at Oklahoma to protect his quarterback because he didn't feel like he could block anybody off the edge.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, they have to play better. I mean, they do. I mean, one of those sacks too in that three sack set was the running back didn't set hard enough. I mean, he got pushed back 3 yards. Like, he's got to be more physical at the point of contact there on a stunt. And then they had another one where they just missed the stunt and didn't handle it the right way. So, he was better than he was against Arkansas. Probably not as bad as everybody wants to make him out to be, but by no means dominating as some other people have wanted to make him out to be. Got to play a lot better, but I think he did take somewhat of a little bit of a step forward from last week to this week in his play.
Yeah, and like I'm not trying to pick on John Campbell either, but all the talks about Lance Hurd right now, John Campbell's not playing good football.
Agreed.
And he's playing football that's hurting you at times, especially with these penalties. And we got a question up here on the screen. I don't think that they're going to move him over, this being Campbell, over to left tackle where he played last year and put Dane at right. I don't think that's the case. But I guess my question is, I am a little bit surprised that Dane Davis didn't play a whole lot of tackle, really, the last 2 weeks. He was in on one of those touchdown drives at Arkansas, and he played 10 snaps in that football game. And again, I know you're talking about Larry Johnson, Oklahoma. I mean, Dane Davis had a game to forget at Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. He was a big part of that as well. But he's a guy that has been playing a lot of football for you and was heavily rotating in with the two tackles earlier in the season. Were you surprised that Dane didn't play more last night and really against Arkansas last week?
Yeah, and I have to be really careful here because I can't. There's a lot of things that makes it really hard for me to evaluate how an offensive lineman plays, right? Yeah. I mean, I can look at somebody in open space. Man, he gave up a sack because he was out of body position. But I don't know what every call is along the way. I know at one point in that football game, Tennessee made a wholesale substitution on the right side, and they played Lampley, and they played Dane Davis, and they did some good things offensively there.
No.
Do you see them do some more things? I mean, Spraggins is not playing. He's not playing really good football either, in my opinion, particularly in pass protection. So for all of the angst against Lance Hurd, and I get it, okay, but and I get a lot of why people are frustrated with that. You know, he missed a game where everybody thought he was going to play. He's been rusty when he's come back. He's not in the shape he needs to be in. There are other guys on the offensive line that are playing that are not playing at a championship level, and it's not just Lance Hurd. So they've got to clean up both sides, particularly at the tackle position moving forward, and they'll get tested again this week. I mean, you're not going to line up in this league and play against bad edge rushers. Tennessee's going to see good edge rushers against Alabama. They're going to see good defensive line play against Kentucky. So the next two are not going to be easy for Tennessee. I mean, it's not like, oh, okay, we got through that one, and wait on Georgia. I mean, you're going to see off the edge, and people are going to bring pressure. I thought it was interesting last night. Florida did not change anything schematically of what they do. they wanted to win an early down, and then they were bringing people on third down. They got third long, they were coming. And that's what they tried to do. And so you can't sit here today and go, well, schematically, the odd man front and this, that caused a problem. They played you straight up and had some success because you weren't winning on early down. So you just got to be better. And you got to help that group out. You've got to win early downs. You got to get Nico outside the pocket. Nico's got to deliver it better. You got to pick up blitzes better, and on and on. I mean, there's a laundry list of things that you have to improve, not just one personnel body and not just one thing. There's a laundry list of things you got to improve in your pass pro.
Vol's time sends us in a super chat, so we thank you so much for that. Really appreciate it. The question is, should Tennessee use a 2QB system in a game to push Nico? Yeah, what you saw from Florida, I don't think that's anywhere close to where Tennessee's going to be right now. Nico's their guy. They're going to, you know, try to work with him, allow him to grow, allow him to make some of those mistakes, learn on the fly. Hopefully that's, you know, kind of an accelerated, you know, stretch there. And he's growing up, you know, before our eyes. He's got to be better. But no, I do not think that Tennessee is remotely entertaining that aspect. And it's a little bit different for Florida as well. DJ Lagway is obviously going to be a promising player, and he made some plays last night, and you saw why he's so heavily coveted. Graham Mertz, a pretty good player, but Billy Napier's on the hot seat. And so, and there was an injury there as well. And so that was kind of an excuse to play both of those.
Listen, I'll give Graham Mertz a ton of credit. Bought into what Billy, and I thought when Billy Napier announced he was going to play too, I was like, okay, that's not going to work. But give Graham Mertz a lot of credit. He bought into that system and played that system to help DJ Lagway. Because what Billy Napier is trying to do is win enough games this year to save his job, but to show enough promise with his future quarterback to save his job. And that's a delicate balance. Now he doesn't have to worry about that balance because he's going to play DJ Lagway the rest of the way against a really, really difficult schedule. Mm-hmm. Jake Merklinger is not ready. Gaston Moore is a guy, if you need him to manage the game, maybe he can manage it a little better. Here's where Nico has to start with his improvement. He got to take care of the ball. That's the first thing he's got to do. Yeah, completion percentage has got to improve. They got to get more vertical shots. They got to do this. He's got to stop turning the football over. Yep. That's the first thing that has to happen. Throw the football away. Don't take some unnecessary sacks if you can avoid it. But you got to take care of the football. Too many fumbles, too many interceptions. He's got to do a better job of taking care of the football first and foremost. I mean, Tennessee had two drives in the first half inside the Florida 30-yard line and got nothing to show for it. Turned it over, and then they had that colossal group of sacks that should never happen.
I mean,
that pushed you back. I mean, you know, you ended up, I think, in third and 26 or whatever there, and you're out of everything. You got to finish better than that. You got to help better than that. Offensively, you got to help you from a play calling standpoint. You got to help better than that on the sack drive, and then obviously you can't have the fumble on the mesh. You got to be cleaner there.
Yeah, I was speaking with we're going to get to plenty of your questions here over the course of the next 30 minutes, so continue to send them in there. I was texting with Nick De La Torre over at Gators Online during the game yesterday, and this is before the injury to Mertz, and he's like, I mean, look what Billy's doing if he survives this. I mean, he's getting his young guy plenty of reps this year to where he's not kind of learning on the fly and all that type of stuff next year. That's more than Heupel did for Nico last year, 100%, because – unless it was a blowout one way or the other, you know, Nico, until the bowl game, you know, Nico did not play. But obviously Florida's plan was to get DJ plenty of run, and of course now he's going to get a whole lot of run. Go ahead, Brent.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a different scenario too, but because one, they were forced to play DJ early because of the concussion to Mertz that he suffered in the Miami game. So now DJ's playing in a mop-up type game or in a what he had, who was that he played, Samford or somebody like that?
Samford, yeah.
In his first start. That situation never presented itself for Tennessee. True. I think Tennessee did not want to invite any kind of quarterback, you know, issue, division, that type of thing along the way. Tennessee got into the meat of the season. You're trying to win football games. You know, we talked about it. I think Rob wrote it coming out of the A&M game. Hey, it's time to make a change. And it was clear that Josh Heupel and his staff were not ready to go and make a change there. I do think that you missed opportunities to play him earlier in ball games where you had leads. I think you could have got him in earlier than what you did. But to me, the Florida situation and the Tennessee situation are a good bit different that made it harder to say, okay, we're going to play Nico in the fourth series of the first half this week, regardless of what's going on. I just don't think that was ever a potential direction. And I don't know if Florida would have done that if Lagway hadn't played the whole game against Stanford. You know, but he put up a bunch of big numbers, and all of a sudden your fans are clamoring, you got to play the five-star, yeah, you got to play the guy. And Billy Napier found a way to make it work until the injury last night. Now everybody's going to get to see him the rest of the way.
He threw for almost 500 yards, and I understand it was Stanford, but throw for almost 500 yards in a single game. It's kind of tough to just say, all right, thanks, we'll see you later.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and again, you're trying to keep him happy, and you're trying to make sure he didn't go into portal and leave. I mean, there's a whole thing that you're having to manage right now that's a real challenge. And they were making it work. I thought they were different offensively. I didn't think they had near as much eye candy with Lagway on the field in terms of shifts and motion as they did with Graham Mertz.
Oh, they had to dumb it down a whole lot.
So that's going to affect them, because I think that misdirection stuff aided them a good bit. I think that's why that Graham Mertz was more effective against Tennessee's aggressive defense moving the football, because of some of the misdirection stuff that he could run and understand, and Lagway's just not there right now.
Yeah, I was told Mertz was operating that offense at a PhD level, and then you literally have to dumb it down kind of to the rookie level, and that's no discredit to DJ. He's a true freshman, right? I mean, to kind of get him in when he's in there. Hey, we're going to take plenty more of your questions. Awesome prize coming up here in a matter of moments as well. All that and more as we continue on here with the Rocky Top Rewind. It is presented by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, they're going to find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers. They've got 80 years of combined experience. Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, personal injury, DUIs, divorce, custody, alimony, all that type of stuff, assault. Again, the practice has been in place for 43 years. This specific partnership with Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey, since 2012. They've also have partners who are energized and ready for today's modern legal demands. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, and Washington County and surrounding areas. Whether you've been injured in a car accident, need a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey is here to help you. Go see him in person today at 142 Cherokee Street, Kingsport, Tennessee. That phone number is on the screen right now. Free consultation if you dial 423-245-4185. Again, 423-245-4185. You can also see him online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLOP.com. Spivey King, Spivey LOP. You got a problem, they're going to find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyer. Welcome back into the Rocky Top Rewind every Sunday night during football season here on the VolQuest.com YouTube channel. Presented as always by our friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LOP. All right, let's get back to your questions. We'll be here till 9 o'clock, so send those in, and we'll do our best to kind of work through those and answer them. Ben wants to know, hey, was Nico known for turning it over in practice like this? And obviously, a lot of you guys know we don't get to see an awful lot of practice. Even when we're there during fall camp, we only get to see a small portion. So there's so much that we don't see. But yeah, surely he's made a bad throw or two in practice. But Brent, a lot of the talk is he's growing, he's learning. But they've been impressed with Nico throughout spring practice and fall camp, and that he was operating the offense at a clip that they were excited about. I don't think there was a big concern, and please correct me if you heard different, I don't think there was a big concern about him turning the football over an awful lot in these scrimmages.
Well, it certainly wasn't expressed. I mean, we kind of joked about it that it felt like every time an offensive coach talked, three or four of their guys were going to Canton for the Hall of Fame.
William Inge with the linebackers too.
We'll throw William in there as well. I mean, there was a lot of glowing remarks, and I remember interviewing Joey Halsey for Ball Calls, and he talked about how Nico didn't make the same mistake twice, and with eyes red and elite level and different things like that. So no, I don't think it had. I don't think he had some of those things taking place. I don't think Nico has quote regressed. I think Nico is a little bit shaken right now because it's been so cluttered around him in the pocket. He's been hit. He's had to move. I think it's taken his eyes off the field. I think it's taken his timing down a little bit. I don't want to say he's seeing ghosts, but I do think that I'm not sure he's as confident as a quarterback and a thrower as he was going to Oklahoma. And that's something that Tennessee's got to help him get back. And I think they started that process a little bit in the second half, but with how much they moved the pocket, I think that's got to continue.
Yeah, again, I thought, I told you this afternoon, I thought he looked poised confidence. You know, when they were rolling him out, the field shrinks. I mean, but I thought he looked really good
rhythm,
when he was rolling out.
Get it in out of your hand.
Yeah.
Speed up. Okay. It's not 7-on-7. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got to play fast. Get it in and out of your hand. Have things for him available to get it in and out of his hands quicker. And let him play more outside where it's not as cluttered. I know we talked about, man, they're going to be able to throw it in the middle. The middle is going to be the great divide. It's going to be this, that, and the other. Well, right now the middle is not the great divide. And they're trying to invite you to throw it in there a little bit, and they're eating you up in there. So I think trying to get it outside where there's a little bit less clutter with his arm strength is not a bad thing as well. I thought they should have done a little bit more of that last night than what they did. I thought they did that good job of that in overtime. I think you can continue to do that. I like the rollout 14-yard pass on the opening play from scrimmage. It's 2 weeks in a row they've gone with that. I think there's some of those things there they can go back to and be pretty repetitive with that. Again, I think they get a little impatient and a little greedy in the passing game after a couple completions. It's okay, we got to go. We got to go big. You don't have to go big. Yeah. You know, go 8 yards. Play second and eight or second and two. It's not a bad play. You know, it doesn't have to be a 25-yard gain to get you into tempo. You can get into tempo when you gain 8 yards on first down or 6 yards on first down. So I think Tennessee's got to be a little bit more patient as play callers.
Yeah, I thought the outs were working well for Nico the other night. I mean, Nico, 10 to 20 yards outside the right numbers, three for four, 42 yards.
Well, it's like you throw the two to Ethan Davis at the end of the first half. When you're trying to get something going there, I think my math's right. You throw it to him at the end of the first half,
yeah.
And he's like, you never come back to it in the second half. Like that's a gift. Six. I mean, how's that any different than extending a running play by throwing it sideways into a wide receiver screen? If he can run and from the slot spot, basically, if he can run a 5 to 7 yard out and you can hit him on that consistently, what's wrong with that play? I go back to the Pittsburgh game in 22 when they couldn't do anything offensively, but they kept throwing the same thing to Tillman, right? It was like, we'll just keep throwing that. Well, if you've got like do that, I don't think they do enough of that. I think they hit a couple of those things like, okay, well, now we've got them loosened up. We're going to go, you know, we're going to go big square in the middle, big over route in the middle. Like just keep taking the little outs and move the sticks. Get them softened up that way, then you can go do whatever you want to do. But two completions is not enough. Keep doing that until they stop you or until they walk up. Then you got them on a stutter go. You got different things there when you convince them they got to squat on some of that stuff. I just think Tennessee's impatient.
Speaking of Cedric Tillman, Caleb wants to know, who is that throw it up and catch it guy like Cedric Tillman was on this team? I know he's not saying this, but there's no Cedric Tillman on this team right now. Having said that, he didn't play, obviously, last night until overtime period. I would say Dante Thornton, don't think that they've used him enough. He's kind of been that big play guy, and definitely wouldn't have said this a year ago today. I would say Dante Thornton. I thought Chris Brazel did some good things last night, Brent, and that's big for Tennessee because he's got so much talent. And you saw what he did at Tulane last year. Like, why on earth can Tennessee not get him to do that here? Thought he stepped up, made a couple nice catches. That one over the middle, that was a bad decision to throw that football by Nico, but it was a gorgeous throw in that tiny pocket. And the fact that he held onto that ball, I don't know how he did it. But I would say Dante Thornton. What would your answer be to this?
I would go Chris Brazel if you can get any kind of consistency out of him. Because I think he can Gumby himself a little bit more. I think he can kind of twist and turn a little bit more than Thornton. But I don't have a problem with throwing it up to Thornton. I don't have a problem throwing it up to Brew McCoy, you know, and let him muscle you somewhere. I mean, we haven't seen those plays, right? We haven't seen a lot of, quote, jump balls or back shoulder type things. You know, again, there's – I think some guys can go make plays. They just right now don't have the whole lot of – I just don't think anybody's got a whole lot of confidence throwing and catching the football right now.
Sam wants to know, do you think we'll see 12 personnel more often now? Went to it a couple times last night when they needed to. They were backed up when they needed some short yardage. You can answer that as well, but I want to get your thoughts on Tennessee going not 12 personnel, 32 personnel. The old three running backs, two tight ends. You're bringing in Nathan Robinson. He's a tight end over here. Holden stays on the other side. Two tights. All right, you got Samson in the back of the full house. You've got Kitzelman offset, and you got Kitzelman as fullback. Jackson Moy as a fullback. Tennessee, of course, scored two touchdowns that way. What'd you think about the that's set for Tennessee, and of course Tennessee's use of 12 in yesterday's game.
Well, I thought it was a nice wrinkle in short yardage. I mean, listen, one of the concerns you have with Florida is they're just big up front. They're really big. I mean, and not just the one, not just 21 or whatever his number was. I mean, but 88's a big body guy. I mean, they got some big, big people up front. And I thought that was a nice wrinkle Tennessee showed. Listen, I'm all for being under center when it's fourth and less than a yard. Don't run jet sweep on fourth and inches where you're 5 yards behind the ball in the shotgun like Florida did. I'm all for getting up
when you have center. A 240-pound quarterback.
Yeah, I'm all for getting under center and get going forward. But no, I liked what they used and how they used it. I thought it was extremely effective, and I think that can continue. We see some 12 personnel in the right defensive structures and formations. Yeah, I think you could see some of those things. I think a little bit of where Tennessee's at right now is, I don't know what their identity is other than Dylan Sampson. Like, Dylan Sampson's going to get 25 to 30 touches a game, okay? All right, that's your identity. But what do you do? Like, what do you hang your hat on? In 22, it was, we're going to throw it over everybody's head, right? That's what we're going to do. I don't know that they had a great identity last year, other than Jalen Wright running the football. What's your identity in the passing game? I think Tennessee's got to find a couple things they can hang their hat on consistently week in, week out, quarter in, quarter out, drive in, drive out, and you got to ride on that a little bit. I go back to that Pitt game I was just talking about. Find something you can do consistently and do it. That would be where I would start offensively right now.
Zach wants to know, what is wrong with the punt coverage? Brent, man, the punt coverage really hurt Tennessee's defense in the fourth quarter. 3 years and 4 or 5 games, it's been dynamite here. And in 2 punt returns, that was kind of erased. It gave Florida starting field position at the 31 or something on that last drive. Low liners, you got to get that air time, allow your coverage unit to get down there, and then make a tackle, right? I mean, make a tackle. The punt team did Tennessee's defense no favors yesterday.
I agree. And again, I'm not sure what you're trying to do punt-wise. Is it a true rugby? If it's a true rugby punt, punt it away from him. True rugby punt, ball's supposed to hit the ground, right? The punt returner's not sure where it's going to go. It's supposed to hit the ground and bounce. Don't throw him a line drive or kick him a line drive into the middle of the field where your kickoff, where your coverage units haven't had a chance to get down there. That was not – for as good as Jackson Ross's punt was when Josh Heupel, believe it or not, decided to play field position and not go for it on 4th and 2 after the whole 4th and inches at his own 10-yard line deal that was whatever it was. Jackson Ross delivered for you big time, you know, and put the ball inside the 5-yard line, and you used that to go get points and get yourself the lead. You needed Jackson Ross to come through big time for you on those last 2 punts. He didn't hit either one of those particularly well. It felt like they were kind of in between. Was that supposed to be a high kick? Was that supposed to be a rugby kick? What was that supposed to be? What it ended up being was a low liner right to the punt returner, which allowed him to get going.
We got a full house now. Of course, it's been me and Brent Hubbs here, but we welcome on Matt Ray, Austin Price. Last 10 minutes here of the Rockets Out Rewind. First, I want to go to Matt real quick. It obviously wasn't a great offensive game for Tennessee. Defense balled out, but a lot of recruits were in-house. They saw an exciting finish. They saw a great environment. Both you guys chime in. I know you spoke to a lot of those guys last night and earlier today. How was the visit weekend for Tennessee, knowing that the game finished the way it did?
Yeah, I think it was a productive weekend for Tennessee, right? I mean, as you said, a lot of defensive recruits in town. You got Christian Gass back. You got Jaden Harmon back. You got Shady Hayward back. Safeties, linebackers made plays. A lot of things that I've heard from recruits today that I've talked to, you know, as it's kind of settled in, the game's finished out, that ending happened right in front of them. Overtime happened right in front of them. It was a cool experience for them to get to see that, see everything unfold right there on the goal line right in front of them. So I think overall for Tennessee, a really productive weekend, don't you, Austin?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, you know, you look at kind of what Tennessee was able to get accomplished, you know, on the field, they were able to get a win. It wasn't pretty, but you know, the atmosphere was fantastic. You know, I thought that, you know, the Checker Nealon looked fantastic at night. So many times we've seen that, you know, of the late afternoon, but to see it in full bloom at nighttime and all the drone shots of the stadium. I thought was really cool. The atmosphere for the recruits was spectacular, and I think that was the reaction coming out of that. Kids don't waffle on the results of a game. Now, they may waffle on the results of a season, but like one game is not going to, you know, determine whether you get one or you don't get one in most instances. But it can set you up with a really solid atmosphere to kind of show what it can be for these kids. And I think a majority of them, especially the ones that have kind of been taking visits in the 25 class, I think it was good for Tennessee just to kind of kill the momentum anybody had for the time being. That doesn't mean those schools are going to stop recruiting them because they're going to keep coming, but Tennessee needed yesterday in the atmosphere in the worst way because of how the schedule has been set up to this point.
You mentioned a lot of defensive recruits in-house, and then, of course, guys who are in the 25 class and might have been taking visits elsewhere. You guys caught up with Christian Gass and said, hey, I'm locked in with Tennessee. That was probably a really fun game for Gass to see, especially the way Tennessee's defense balled out.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was his first SEC experience, you know, in terms of a SEC versus SEC opponent. He saw Georgia earlier in the year play Tennessee Tech, but I mean, he'll be quick to tell you that doesn't, you know, match up to what he saw last night. The atmosphere, the time that he was able to spend with the coaching staff, and what the staff showed him, you know, the pregame attention, everything like that, I think was really good for him. He, you know, got some FaceTime with Josh Heupel in pregame. That was something that resonated really well with him, and he had a blast. And I'll tell you who else had a blast was Shady Hayward. I mean, I said this earlier in the week on Trail Tidbits, Eric. I said it on the Inside Scoop with Josh Newberg. When Shady Hayward goes somewhere, he goes somewhere with an open mind. He intends to have a good time. But he and his family had a good time last night. They were up singing Rocky Top. They were cheering. They were really into the game. You know, same with Travis Smith, David Sanders. These commits are really bought into what Tennessee's selling right now.
Tennessee had a five-star edge on campus, Austin Price. You know, how did Tennessee do with him? And, you know, where's that meter in terms of, you know, moving with him after last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee had a really strong, you know, showing. Again, I think any of the defensive players are feeling like, okay, I can see it. Because Tennessee made a ton of plays on defense last night, both off the edge and in the interior. So I think if you're any, you know, defensive recruit that was in the house, you loved what you saw last night, the way Tim Banks attacks, the way they play, the atmosphere that helps the defense. And let's face it, Tennessee's done a nice job of recruiting edge players, you know, under Josh Heupel. And that resonates with kids when you see James Pierce and you see Josh Josephs. And there you're in your second series of the game, Hubber, and you've got, you know, Caleb Herring coming into the game. And I thought Caleb, you know, I thought for a kid that's still not played a ton of college football, I thought he held up pretty well last night.
Well, again, you're taking young players and getting young players on the field. And in this day and age in recruiting, that's what guys are looking to see.
Yep.
You can tell them all the time, Matt, hey, you're going to play. You're going to play. I got to see it, man. I got to see it. I'm seeing these other freshmen ball out places. I want to see you ball some freshmen.
Saw what Boo Carter did last. Sorry to get y'all. Boo Carter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those are selling points, and that's important in recruiting.
Well, I think last night for Tennessee, you know, they've had some big recruiting wins on the offensive side of the football, obviously. Nico, Mike Matthews, Braylon Staley. I mean, they've won these big-time recruiting battles over time. But I think last night, defensively, you saw some high school recruiting wins show up for this staff, right? You saw James Pierce and Josh Joseph, which they've been making plays for a couple of years now, obviously. But those were early evaluations for this staff that they crushed at the edge position.
Ricky Gibson.
Ricky Gibson. Arion Carter, and David Hobbs made a play there in the third quarter. T-Lander. I mean, you know, and then obviously, like you said, Boo Carter was electric, you know, in and around the box last night.
Question for you guys. Anybody can jump in here. You know, Brian wants to know, is Brew's injury a liability right now? Jet sweep was the only time that he touched the ball. Are teams ignoring him due to his limitations and focusing on other receivers?
We talked about that on The Nation tonight. Like, I'm not saying you don't put Brew on the field because I still think he can do some good things, but I think you have to branch your rotation out a little bit. If you're that hampered, I mean, Squirrel, how many times last night, and it was a couple. It wasn't just the one time at the end of the game where he was hanging that shoulder from the AC joint. Like, that's – I mean, sometimes, you know, like being tough is great, but like, you know, not to the hindrance of the team. And so like, if you know, if you're not going to throw it Brew's way, because he does got a couple fingers that have ligament damage and he's got a splint on there, then, you know, does he need to be in the game? I mean, like, you know, I think, you know, they have to really think long and hard about, you know, kind of their receiver rotation due to the injuries. If there weren't injuries, then go with what you know, right? But, like, I think that you can help Brew, you can help Squirrel, you can help Dante Thornton. I mean, for a guy that was basically held out the entire game, you know, once Dante Thornton did catch the ball in overtime, I mean, he looked pretty explosive to me. So, you know, I think you help them by giving Mike Matthews more run. You help them by, you know, look at Chris Brazel last night. He rewarded more run with, I thought, his best overall game at Tennessee.
When Dante Thornton came in overtime and they went a little tempo there, he came across the formation on a motion. They hit a run. And then he's lined up on the outside. He's waving. He wants the football. He had a one-on-one situation. He wanted a jump ball in that situation. I mean, like, I thought, you know, for a guy like that, he looked like he wanted to make some plays. And, you know, I think with Brew and Squirrel being banged up, I think you got to give Mike Matthews some run at some point here in the near future. I mean, again, you go into a game this week where it's all on the table again against Alabama, and this is essentially a play-in game in some ways.
I agree.
And, you know, I think you've got to find a way to create some explosives and, you know, Alabama's going to do it with a freshman wide receiver that, if you haven't heard, he should still be in high school. So
he's just 17.
Well, I mean,
when's he turn 18, Matt? You got a beat on that? When's his birthday?
I think it's February.
I mean,
he's going to play this whole season at 17.
Mike Matthews has played 13 snaps last night. That tells me that you have a limited number of plays you're comfortable with him running. You're running some specific called things for him. Now, they had him once open in the clear, and Nico didn't get him the ball. But it doesn't tell me that you feel comfortable putting him on the field on first down and everything's there to play. You know, otherwise, to me, you're playing him more than 13 snaps. And I just don't think, for all the talk about where Mike Matthews is, Austin, it doesn't feel like they're comfortable with him taking a high volume of snaps right now.
It's either that, or they get so locked in with their group in the game.
They got 74 people in golf shirts on the sidelines, and 12 of them have iPads. They know how many snaps somebody's playing.
Hey, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but we know that this staff has got locked in with guys, and they just don't rotate a ton. I mean, it's one of the two. Maybe we should ask Josh Heupel tomorrow. The bigger question is, is that a Reese's hat, Matt, or is that a Dukes of Hazzard hat you're wearing here? I'm trying to figure out what it is.
Glacier National Park.
When you're back further away, it looked orange. Once you leaned in, we could see it was tan.
Let's end on a fun one, because AP, you actually brought this up on the pod last night. Michael wants to know, does Samson break the single-season rushing record? He's just barely below pace right now. 15 rushing touchdowns is where he's at, second in the nation, first in the SEC. 28 rushing touchdowns in his career. That's tied for fourth all time. The 15 right now for single season, it's fourth all time. AP, does he do it?
Well, I don't know about the yardage record. Obviously, that's held by Travis Stevens, 1364. But the touchdowns, he's going to absolutely break. And Hubbard, I thought your stat last night about G. McEver was way more impressive than anything I've heard. I mean, G. McEver, I mean, did he play with leather helmets? I mean, like that.
He played a long time ago. He's 10 away from setting the career mark for touchdowns, for rushing touchdowns in a Tennessee career. If he's going to have a chance to get Stevens' record, they're going to have to find the run game in the first half.
Yeah, I agree.
They can't bank on him getting 112 yards in the third quarter, like he has the last 2 weeks. They got to find something in the first half to help this offense.
It'll be rougher sledding against Kentucky and against Georgia. Now, if he can somehow manage through those games with 100 yards, I think he might can get there, because he's going to get some type of postseason game, whether it's a playoff or not. One would imagine, if he chooses to play, if it's not the playoff. So, I think he can get there yardage-wise, but he's absolutely going to break the single-season touchdown record, and, you know, we'll see about the other.
We got a lot coming up this week. Still plenty of talk about Florida. We got rewatch pieces up there. We got reaction from recruits who were in-house. Austin and Matt caught up with a bunch of those guys, all that and more. It's over at VolQuest.com. We're looking ahead to the third Saturday in October. Stock reports coming up tomorrow. We'll have the Rocky Top Roundtable, VolQuest podcast. No better time to join us than right now, Brent Hubbs. Halfway through the regular season, it goes by in such a flash, but a huge stretch of games. You just beat Florida. You got Alabama at home this weekend. Plenty of conversation and a great time over on the General's Quarters.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you're right. You're not exactly where you want to be. I mean, you feel like you should be unbeaten because you gave a game away at Arkansas. But listen, you're in October, and every game you play in October counts. It's important. And with each one you win, they get more and more important. So we'll see if Tennessee can find a way to win this one at home this week. The schedule is at home, which helps you. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of football stuff going on, and this team is in the conversation. You just got to keep winning to stay in the conversation. And we're going to do everything we can to find out who's available, who's not available, what they're going to do, how this changes and how they adjust to this and that moving forward. So we got plenty of coverage all week long. With football, basketball's getting ready to get started and cranked up. We got some fall baseball notes from you. Tons of recruiting from these guys here as well. It'll be a huge recruiting weekend for Tennessee this weekend with the 3:30 start. Tennessee's been – they had to survive September, as Austin said, with no atmosphere. Now they've got back-to-back weeks that are as good as anybody's had in the country on their home venues. So Tennessee's got to take advantage of that in recruiting.
He's Brent Hubbs, Austin Price, Matt Ray. I am Eric Kane. As always, thank you so much to our presenting sponsor here, the Rockies Out Rewind. That is Spivey King and Spivey LLP. You got a problem, let them find a solution for you. TN Trial Lawyers, that phone number for a free consultation is 423-245-4185, 423-245-4185. Thank you guys for joining us. Thanks so much for the questions throughout the show. Every Sunday night during football season, 8 o'clock to 9, VolQuest YouTube channel. We call it the Rocky Top Rewind.